Driving plays a big part in driving the local economy. It helps us all get where we're going and creates good jobs close to home. At Cenovus Energy, our refineries in Toledo and Lima are a reliable domestic source of gasoline, diesel, and jet fuel. Plus, more than 2,300 employees and contractors work for us here in Ohio. See how we're helping local communities move forward at Cenovus.com. Driving plays a big part in driving the local economy. It helps us all get where we're going and creates good jobs close to home. At Cenovus Energy, our refineries in Toledo and Lima are a reliable domestic source of gasoline, diesel, and jet fuel. Plus, more than 2,300 employees and contractors work for us here in Ohio. See how we're helping local communities move forward at Cenovus.com.
Let's get this war started, baby!
Just our subjective, like, throw out of the number, like, out of 10 rating, like, in the middle, so people don't see it as easy.
Want to throw it?
Yeah, I think so.
Just random out of 10 for the movie?
A random out of 10, yeah.
Okay, 3, 2, 1, 7.
7.
Oh!
Hey!
Friendship! One person that changed the most from Dune Part 2, the film, versus Dune, the books. Chani was completely different. The worst part about it,
it gave her agency. Welcome, welcome everyone to the Tune Around Podcast. My name is Richard. And that's awesome.
And you can leave now, please. Yeah, that's the biggest red flag.
Today, we're talking about Dune Part 2, the movie, and its comparisons and its...
The changes
from the books.
And you know why we're doing that, Rich? It's a more nuanced conversation. Because you see all these reviewers out there going like...
10 out of 10, best movie ever.
I like this thing. Hey, did we also like the thing? Yeah, generally. We also like the thing.
Yeah, but we're gonna
talk specific about the movie to the books, how this adaptation was made. Got some background on Denis Villeneuve.
You practiced that in the mirror?
Hell yeah, I did. And we're going to talk about him. We're going to talk about the changes and what we liked, what we didn't like. It's mostly what we liked. I don't think we're in the camp of other people that were like 10 out of 10.
No.
We're not there. And I hope that the things we say here, because we're not going and talking negative stuff just to be like, hey, we're different. We're contrarian. We're cool. Look at our bookshelf. Like, this is our thing. It's not the same as the books. No, I think this is a very faithful adaptation, all things considered. Mm-hmm. And it's one of those moments, like I see people online saying, hey, this is the Lord of the Rings. This is Star Wars. This is the moment. This is the film of the decade type of situation. And I see that love. I see especially for people that have read Dune a long time ago, even recently. Mm-hmm. But I know other booktubers out there read it in the 90s, read it in the 80s, and now actually get to see this adaptation on screen. Whoa. We read it like within the past year or two.
Especially sound and visuals.
Yeah.
My God.
Oh, Rich.
Is it a faithful visual adaptation? Hell yeah.
How much were you salivating over those other bald men? Like, just going, oh, those are my people. Oh,
the Harkoners, yeah, they really are my people.
Yeah, yeah, you and them. You just have the best group. Them, Harkoners, The Rock.
The Rock.
Just, you got a squad, dude. So, yeah, everybody loved this film. 95% audience on Rotten Tomatoes as we're recording this. 93% for critics, but who cares about the critics?
Yeah.
As we're trying to be critics about
this.
Listen, if you come here, you don't come for our critical point of view. You come for us to go, I actually don't know why. Yeah.
Yeah. I think they come for the banter.
Yeah, yeah.
Either of us alone could not succeed on YouTube. Our powers combined that make it work.
You're telling me they come here to hear me go, oh, that's...
It's why we're still at 20 and not 30,000 subscribers.
The more singing, the more we just... Yeah.
You understand, like, we kept our intro song of us just, like, singing poorly Lord of the Rings.
Yeah.
I have a feeling we would be much higher if without it, but we've kept it for the sake of nostalgia.
We get at least a comment every month. One just happened the other day of saying that intro is the most annoying, incessant thing ever. And we just ignore those comments. It makes us happy inside, okay? So what also makes us happy is getting really nuanced about this stuff. So we're going to talk book changes, the good, bad, why it happened. And I think it'll be fun because we can just nerd out.
Yeah.
Why not, right?
It'll be fun.
First thing to go over is... Denis Villeneuve directing this film. He read the book when he was 13 years old, 13 or 14 years old, teenager. And now he's this huge director, gets to actually adapt a story to the screen. That's freaking cool.
That's pretty impressive.
That's awesome.
That's a dream.
It is. Yeah, it's very similar to where you hear the comparisons, because Peter Jackson reading Lord of the Rings and wanting to adapt.
Actually able to complete the Lord of the Rings. Yeah, no, it's pretty one for one right there.
You can clearly tell that they loved making this film, and they were very faithful. We'll talk about the changes and go into mm-hmm. why and what all happened. But Hans Zimmer, who did the score, he always works with Christopher Nolan all the time. They're best buds.
They're like two peas in a pod. Not they're like us.
No. Oh, that was really nice, actually. Yeah. So they work together all the time. And when Christopher Nolan was making the movie Tenet, he called up Hans. He said, "Hans, how you doing? Want to come make a little soundtrack for me? That's also a banger, and you know, cement your legacy even more." And Hans was going to, but then he heard just one word: Dune. He heard Dune was coming out. And he said, "Sorry, I got to go work on Dune."
He made the right call.
Yeah. Which movie's going to stand more to the test of time, Tenet or Dune? I want to take a long shot and guess here, Rich.
I'm going to take, you know, a stab in the dark and say maybe, possibly, Dune.
That's a good guess.
Dune's going to stand out.
Absolutely solid guess. So now we have Hans Zimmer. We have Denis Villeneuve. They're putting all this love in it. Film looks amazing. But we're going to stop just saying good things and what everybody knows obviously looks great and get more nerdy. Let's talk about the changes.
All right, let's go. Where do you want to start?
Very first change. Let's center with Paul. Paul Atreides, the biggest changes. Were they good? Were they bad? Why were the changes made? And the first change, his personality. Did you find the personality from the movie, personality from the books, any different?
Yeah, quite a bit. I think there's two big aspects of his personality that changed from the books, and I'm not sure if they were completely necessary, but I can understand the argument that they needed to be changed. In the books, Paul, after a scene with him and his mother in the tent, first kind of night out after the Harkonnen raid and everything, he goes through this whole dream, this spice-induced hallucination sequence. And from then on has ever changed and is stolen. His emotions are kind of taken away from him, and he's horrified of the monster he is. And from then on, he's far more logical and uses his emotions appropriately. He still has emotions, but he's able to compartmentalize
them. That might
be
my favorite scene really well. In the book, because we're going to review the book next week or something too.
Yeah.
So my favorite scene is where his father's dead. Duke Leto's dead. Gone. And he is in the tent with his mom, his mom's just struck and all this, but not as much struck, that's the wrong word, but they're in the tent and he's going, "I can't be emotional now. Why don't I feel? Why don't I feel any emotions?
Why can't I grieve my father?
Why my father died and I can't feel anything? Okay, I have to figure things out first. Let's logic this through." And he's connecting the dots. He's going, "This is what happened. This is what happened." He's figuring out the plot. And his mom, Jessica, who's this Bene Gesserit, who has built up this whole entire time, all the Bene Gesserits to be these absolutely
brilliant planners, these yes. manipulators that they see more than anyone else.
They're planning generations. Their plans are not next week. They are 90 generations down the line to create this Haderach, which would be Kwisatz Haderach. And so built up all this way. And when they're in the tent and Paul is just because figuring stuff out. And Paul's just going, "She is so slow. I figured this out already long time. Why is she so slow? She can't keep up. My mother is slow." And then he's logicking through things, figuring this out. You just see his emotions. He's just one track mind. Even later in the book, when there's a scene with Gurney, I have written down, this was the moment, scene with Gurney, where Gurney's talking to him about the loss of life. And and this is later, obviously, so things change between them. But Rich, this is one of your favorite scenes.
Oh, yeah. Basically where it's a comparison scene of when the Duke Leto went out to the spice fields and the Harkonnen's manipulation, all this. But
isn't it Harkonnen, by the way? Harkonnen, right? Or is it Harkonnen?
I think it's Harkonnen's.
Oh, that was Rockin'. Oh, okay.
Yeah, we always get the names wrong. It's fine. But basically, the worm is about to swallow their spice manufacturing plant, and the Duke is worried about the people and tries to save them and cares the far more. The Duke.
Yeah.
Duke Leto.
Duke Leto. Yeah.
He cares far more about human lives than things.
Mm-hmm.
And then Gurney sees Paul of when he's attacking the, the smugglers. And Paul mentions to Gurney, it's like, it's a real shame that we couldn't save the equipment as his people are, like, killing the smugglers.
Mm-hmm.
And Gurney goes, there was a time when...
Yeah, what?
When the Atreides cared more about the loss of life than of things.
Equipment. But all Paul's thinking is the logistics. He's just thinking things and getting to the goal. He's almost detached from humanity in a sense.
It's a combination of his Bene Gesserit training and the Fremen. The Fremen, their culture really kind of pushes that even further.
Right. And in the films, I guess the big difference there is there's a scene I remember where with him and Chani, and Paul cries during a scene. Don't get me wrong, in the book, he eventually grieves over his father, but after logicking through. So one notable difference is in the film, he seems more emotional at times, or you don't get that kind of fear is the mind killer sense as much. And I think there's good reasons for that. We'll talk about that.
The big one being it's really hard to show that in a movie.
It's a lot of internal dialogue. Yeah. So how do you internally show this is what Paul's thinking and what he's really thinking is he's logicking through.
It makes sense to make him a bit more emotional. That way Timothy Chalamet can actually
act.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. But what it comes at the cost of is then you also start to see the shift in goals. So in the book, there's pretty early on, Paul realizes an attempt of, hey, here's my path of revenge, but here's where my path of revenge leads me.
Mm-hmm.
And I see myself standing over the Baron, killing him. And I tell him, I am your, hello, grandfather.
Yeah.
And he sees that path and then discounts it going like, that will lead to global jihad. Universal jihad.
Yeah, even worse.
Even worse. I need to figure out a way, whether I live or die, it's happening. I need to figure out a way to contain the violence.
Mm-hmm.
And he figures out a way to, I need to become emperor. But not on a big war. I need to do it here on Arrakis.
Yep.
Before things get out of hand.
Yeah, so his reasoning in the book is become emperor to prevent the jihad. In a sense. But he also, there's an inkling of revenge he wants as well. But
it's righteous I need to,
honor, I'm both Atreides and...
And also he's a Fremen. He's like, the Fremen have been wrong.
Yeah.
He's like, I'm doing this for my people, the Fremen, that they deserve Arrakis. So,
and obviously in the film, Lord of the Rings has a very similar thing, where Lord of the Rings, there's a 17-year time skip in the Fellowship. Well, in the book, it's 17-year time skip, but in the film, you can't see the 17 years there. In Dune, there's a 2-year time skip, and in the film, they don't have a 2-year time skip, but Paul has been with the Fremen
for less than 9 months.
Less than 9 months? Okay.
Closer probably to less than 8.
Got it. Yeah, so there was a 2-year time skip, but not with the... what point was that? Was that after the portion with the Fremen? It was a 2-year time skip? Yeah, it was 2 years, I believe.
In the books.
Yeah, in the books. Yeah. That's what I'm talking about.
It was about 2 years.
Yeah, about 2 years or so. Yeah. So that time skip you can't really show super well if you have a little subtitle and then go from there. That's an option. But bring me back. What was I talking about with that point?
The revenge.
the revenge aspect of it, where that shift leads the more emotion behind the film is that he ends up killing the Baron in the film. Gurney also ends up killing Raban in the film, whereas in the books, we'll get more specific with his little sister, but if you guys haven't read the books, if you're listening, but Alia, Paul's little sister, is 2 years old in the book. Because there's a 2-year time skip. Jessica has her kid, Paul's little sister. She ends up killing the Baron in a pretty badass faction.
I love Alia in the book. It's one of my favorite aspects of the entire story.
But of course, how do you add that to an already 2 hour 45 minute runtime?
It's something where I get why they decided to not include it. And the change, I think, was the substitute of Alia is pretty good. I think it was really creepy how Jessica's talking to Alia while she's in the womb.
Yeah, that's creepy.
That's creepy. Yeah. And just Jessica walking around like, your sister tells you to stop this. Like, it's freaky. It's weird. That is probably the best way they could do it.
Without actually having the 2 years and then Alia.
I think it was a wise decision, even though a little part of me is sad. I can see little Alia just like, walking around talking like an adult woman, like killing the Baron with a gumdrop. Like, that would have been cool, but probably couldn't do it.
I think the Dune 1984 movie version does have that.
It's just funny.
I saw a clip of it. Well. It's interesting, especially 1984 technology. So what that whole revenge thing leads to is what Denis Villeneuve said about the book is he was taking the intentions of Frank Herbert and what he had when he wrote Dune Messiah, the following book, and he was making clear what the message of this movie was. And we'll get more into that with Chani and Chani's character, but this is what I heard. This is what Denis Villeneuve said. He was making it more clear that this false prophets are not a good thing. That was Frank Herbert's message. And what came across in the book, some people left reading Dune going like, yes, the hero won.
Yeah.
But Paul is supposed to be an anti-hero. He's very flawed.
But it's far more subtle in the books.
Yes.
And a lot of people just kind of missed it.
Yeah, it's far more subtle in the books, whereas the film, it makes it very clear that he's letting this revenge overtake him, and he's really getting into... You see, and that's reflected through Chani, who we'll get into, but that's the big change that was made, and Villeneuve was essentially saying, hey, Frank Herbert pretty much wrote Dune Messiah to clarify and to expand that this was the message of the book. And so Denis, when he was making this film, shifted that to go, I'm going to make it very clear what was trying to be said by the author.
I do know that Frank Herbert already intended to write Dune Messiah, and it wasn't just a response to people that didn't understand Dune.
Yeah.
But a part of it is like, hey, look, if you didn't understand Dune, like it becomes real clear in Dune Messiah.
Very clear. And the relationships that change in the book as well.
Mm-hmm.
Jameis and his wife and kids.
Oh, right? Completely gone. Oh, and also just, okay, that was a change I don't particularly like in the movie because I don't think it made any sense of the fact that Paul was so attached to Jameis and like that apparently there are all these flash forward scenes with Jameis giving him words of wisdom and they're supposed to be good friends and yet Jameis seems just kind of like an ass.
I don't understand any
of that.
So what I read as well, I think from moviegoers some movie reviews that happened is they were saying Jameis, he's one of the futures that Paul saw in the movie was seeing Jameis as his mentor. So one of his perceived futures was that Jameis was teaching him the ways. But in actual life, he ends up killing Jameis and not going down that road. So it was one of those possible futures that just...
I assumed as much.
Yeah.
But, would it, like, it just made more sense for that to be, like, Stilgar.
Yeah, well, Stilgar... Do you want to move on? So Paul, that's most of the changes. Also, his son dies in the book, but that's another...
And it's another thing of, in the books, if you weren't keying in the books... that something's a little wrong, that Paul isn't like the complete hero and that he's supposed to be, is when his son dies. It's like, I'll grieve him later. There will be other sons. And he moves forward. And you go, something's not right with this boy. Something's a little off.
What was the exact scene? I remember reading it, the end thing he said in the chapter of like, the universe can be so cruel, or the universe does not realize how cruel it really is, something along those lines, where it wasn't exact. He didn't react how he was supposed to, but he kind of took it into a, man, much worse things are going to happen in the future. That's what I'm recalling.
Yeah, well, he just felt very detached from that scene. Like, he was comparing, like, the horror of his son dying.
Yeah.
And he knows, like, all the more suffering that's going to happen, too. And it's just kind of, it made his son's death feel small. That's kind of how I took it. He's just so far removed from... There's a quote in the book, something like, the Kwisatz Haderach is more than a man and also less than one.
Okay.
So he becomes more, becomes this legend, becomes all-seeing, all these great things, but he becomes less human because he's so far removed.
Do you think then overall from all these changes... there were positive changes, negative, neutral. What's your overall view of the movie, Paul?
I think overall, Paul was probably the right change to get across the correct message of the book. I get it. But it is less nuanced, and that's what I liked about the book, is kind of how fun it is, of how Paul can be both. Like, you see the wrong path he's going down, and the war, and like the warnings. Mm-hmm. But it does come from good intentions, which is part of the interesting thing about it. You know, hell is paved with, by the road of good intentions.
And that's
wonderful, where the movie takes it far more like beat you over the head. Like, yeah, revenge bad. Don't follow false prophets. It's bad. It's like, it's not as fun.
And that's why he was changing the message. Well, not changing the message. He was emphasizing the message to go, I don't want the viewers, I'm talking about director Denis Villeneuve again,
to get confused.
He doesn't want the viewers to get confused, just like Frank Herbert didn't want the readers to get confused. Mm-hmm. And so I see why. Obviously, it's more, the book just has more time, more room to make that more interesting. But yes, Paul was more revengeful, and he wasn't exactly that logic kind of removed from human emotions as much as he was throughout the book versus the film. I think that's generally true.
Yeah, it kind of takes away a little bit of Paul's gravitas a little bit, because in the book... he's a force to be reckoned with. I think the only time we get that in the movie, really, is when he is at the Council of the Fremen. And he tells, like, not one of you can challenge me. And, like, that kind of speech was, like, desperate. That's a little bit of the Paul that I remember from the books.
Yeah.
In comparison to the ending of the movie, I thought it was kind of lame compared to what they have in the books. And I get it. Again, it's the message of the movie. The director doesn't want to make Paul look too cool in the end, because then that kind of oversteps the message.
Yeah.
But in the book, it's cool. It's really awesome. And I get how that kind of confuses the message.
Would you say it's fair that in the movie, as an anti-hero, he looks more anti, and in the book, he looks more hero?
Sure.
Yeah. And so it's basically, look at that anti-hero line, and I think a good, you know, let's criticize both the book and the film.
Now, if you can't, everyone's wrong.
If you can't tell, we both love the book. And you know, so in the book, Frank Herbert maybe leans more into the hero part. Mm-hmm. And in the film, Denis Villeneuve has Paul lean more into the anti part. And so they're kind of compensating for each other in a way.
I get what you mean.
You get that? Because you're not, by the end, you're going like, okay, Paul's wrong. By the end of the film, you go like, oh man, he's almost Chani, which, let's get into Chani, and this helps with that conversation. But you almost look at Paul like, yeah, he's gone. He's gone, and he's gone beyond the deep end. Revenge has gotten to him, all this. In the book, you kind of finish and go, okay, he won in the end, but at what cost? That's the question.
It's more like, hey, he accomplished his goal, he became the emperor, and over. It looks like things worked out. But then he's like, but where is this going?
And he then knows. Dune Messiah goes to. Yeah. So Chani, we've been talking about Paul first. We probably should have talked about Chani first. Because Chani is the biggest change in
close to Jessica.
I think Chani's
also
bigger.
Almost a 180.
Let's do Chani first.
Let's do Chani.
If there's one person that changed the most from Dune Part 2, the film, versus Dune, the books, Chani was completely different.
Yeah.
And the very first thing is Chani versus Stilgar, that kind of conflict that goes throughout the film and then leads to the end, where Chani in the movie doesn't believe in the Lisan al-Ghaib.
Yeah.
And the reason behind all this, we'll go into all the specifics of why she doesn't, but again, Denis Villeneuve was inserting a character for inserting a character that we could agree with, root for, slash show the audience what they should think, in a way. Chani's supposed to be awesome. Like, this this is the false prophet. This is the message. Chani is kind of your hero of this story in a way.
Yeah, and probably setting up for book or movie three.
Movie three, yeah.
That she's probably going to be more on the hero side. I don't know where they're going with the third movie. I have no idea, because I think they set themselves up in a place that, like, I don't know how they continue on with Dune Messiah, because now it's in a very different place.
Can I say something you're about to really agree with?
Okay.
The worst part about Chani's change and how she changed, by far, we could talk about the implications of the whole movie, but the worst part about it...
It gave her agency.
Yeah, that was one of the reasons why Chani was different, because
she actually had agency.
In the book, to clarify, no agency.
Yes.
Basically none.
But I think she was a good character for the story of, like, for Paul.
Yes, and
she serves a really good purpose in the book.
Two points to make. The first, you know what? I'll go back to what I was saying, then remind me that. Now I'm getting excited. Now I'm getting real excited. Okay. The worst part about Chani's change, by far, was how she found out about why she didn't believe the Lisa and Al-Ghaib. Remember, there's that line in the movie where she says, the Bene Gesserit spreading all those lies, like, this is ridiculous, and I don't believe. The worst part about that is the Bene Gesserit are supposed to be this, not ethereal, ethereal is the wrong word, but these ultra-smart, tactical, generational planning, insane world-building kind of group, that this group of women that are just too intelligent for the average animal. Everyone else is animals. They're elite humans. They outthink everybody. And the fact that a Fremen found out about the plan just takes away that coolness factor of the Bene Gesserit. I really didn't like that.
I agree. The fact that... So all of these generations of planning that the Bene Gesserit have had, and it's just like they only got some of them fundamentalists, and the rest are kind of like, oh yeah, these Bene Gesserit people keep spreading these rumors. Don't believe them. Like, it takes a little bit away where there was something about it with in the book where all of the Fremen, like all of them, like it was ingrained into their culture. It wasn't just rumors and like little things. It was their entire culture was manipulated by the Bene Gesserit.
It was water, and Lisa and Al-Ghaib is their culture.
Yeah. And basically more than half of their culture is the Bene Gesserit. And it's pretty powerful. And especially it being kind of used against them. It's great. The fact that Chani's just kind of like, yeah, that's Bene Gesserit hooey.
The kind of belief of like, everything spread around is wrong.
There's also something wrong with that existing in the Fremen culture.
Yeah.
The Fremen culture is so extreme because it has to be to survive. They are a unit. They kind of don't have the luxury of argument and going away from their culture. Like, their thoughts on water and how they treat it religiously. No one would touch the sacred water that they're saving away for the Lisan al-Ghaib to actually save their planet. That is not one single Fremen would ever touch. There is no room for debate. There is no room for any kind of argument or dissent. That's how the Fremen survive, is like this religious fervor.
Right.
The fact that like half of them just kind of don't believe the prophecies is like, okay, well, what else don't they believe? Is there just a group of Fremen who waste water all the time?
It makes it less believable. Yeah, it takes away from the Bene Gesserit in that sense. And I'm glad you agree with me on that. Because that part was, it's very, I know it's not the biggest, grandest thing. Oh, movie's ruined. But it does take away that change. So anything you do to change a story will impact the author's vision. Because I think this is true for all adaptations, that a goal of a proper adaptation is to be a steward of the story. Tell the story that the author was trying to tell. And then if you want to make a story of your own, just write a story of your own. Now, of course, Denis Villeneuve, I know where his heart is with this.
He definitely did his best. Yes. And I think his best was very good.
I think this little small part of the conversation is just more interesting to me than going about the big, like, big points of, like, wow, he paced that. So, like, talking about those things where it's interesting to look at. One, the big change he makes with Chani has that unintentional consequence of those smaller things that add up to the believability of the world or mm-hmm. something that you don't think about as much.
Well, also you have to think about this is because he changed Paul's personality and kind of his arc mm-hmm. in this movie, he had to change Chani because in the book, Chani is the right path. Chani is his link, his anchor to humanity,
yeah.
and probably the right thing to do. That the good thing for Paul is to live a good life with Chani. That's the right thing to do. And the power hungry, the wrong part is to go become emperor and take the princess, and that he should comfort his not, I guess technically not wife, but he should
comfort concubine.
Yeah. With the loss of their son, and he more looks at it tactfully of like, oh, you'll have another son. Like, it just,
yeah,
more dismissive, where
yeah.
she is the anchor. She actually wants what's best for Paul. Everyone else wants the Lisan al-Ghaib, and she is his anchor, and he kind of discounts it, and he eventually turns away from it. So, it's important in the book to see that of what mm-hmm. he could have and where he could go, and he doesn't. In the movie, you can't really have that because he's already fairly emotional. He's going down this path of revenge, so Chani can't be that link of emotion and humanity because he's already there.
Right, right. And to clarify this, so for non-book readers, in the end of the book and the whole direction of the book versus the films is Chani not for a second really doubts he's the... She's a believer in Lisan al-Ghaib. She believes all this stuff. There's no conflict between her and Stilgar. She's on board.
To be fair, she's given a lot of evidence of their first, like, spice drug orgy thing, whatever in the yeah. book, and basically has a collective hallucination.
Driving plays a big part in driving the local economy. It helps us all get where we're going and creates good jobs close to home. At Cenovus Energy, our refineries in Toledo and Lima are a reliable domestic source of gasoline, diesel, and jet fuel. Plus, more than 2,300 employees and contractors work for us here in Ohio. See how we're helping local communities move forward at cenovus.com. Driving plays a big part in driving the local economy. It helps us all get where we're going and creates good jobs close to home. At Cenovus Energy, our refineries in Toledo and Lima are a reliable domestic source of gasoline, diesel, and jet fuel. Plus, more than 2,300 employees and contractors work for us here in Ohio. See how we're helping local communities move forward at cenovus.com.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
With Paul, and it sees parts of their life together.
They're on board. Yeah.
Like, she sees all the things, and it's like, oh, yeah, you are. You are the Lisan al-Ghaib. I have literally seen
it. You no longer need faith. That's factual.
That's factual. I've literally seen it all. Yeah. I've seen our life together. Okay.
And here's how different the book and movie are, where the movie ends with Chani going off on the worm and leaving Paul. The book ends with Chani talking with Jessica. And Jessica consoling Chani that, hey, don't worry. Paul is only marrying the empress. Or
the princess.
The princess. Yeah, thank you.
Princess Arulan.
Arulan, I think.
I said Arulan.
Oh, did you have that end?
I said
you know Arulan. Me trying to catch in everything to make you look bad. That's just me. I just...
You know what's what's funny about that is I get things wrong all the time.
And that's the one time.
You don't know if I'm wrong, so you never catch me on it.
This time I gotcha.
You're equally as wrong, sometimes more so. And no, you just can't catch me.
Most of the time more so. It's significantly. But bring me back. Help me.
Jessica is comforting Shawnee.
Yep. And Jessica is comforting Shawnee and basically saying, Shawnee, hey, don't worry. The history books aren't going to remember this political marriage between Paul and the princess. They're going to see you as the wife, just like they saw me, and reflecting her and Duke Leto's relationship. Jessica and Duke Leto, she was his concubine and didn't marry him for political reasons, just like Shawnee doesn't have to worry. Don't worry, Paul is still with you in the end. And that's how the book ends.
It ends in a far more hopeful way, mm-hmm. and where people would say, oh yeah, Paul's the hero. Like, this is a...
Yes, that's the big change.
This is a minor sacrifice, not a... pretty major one.
Right, and this is, I know we've reflected on this a couple points, but I want to quote from Denis Villeneuve too, mm-hmm. you know, so he can defend himself here. On the stand, Denis, here you go. Let's talk to him. So he says this exactly. When Frank Herbert wrote Dune and when the book came out, he felt that the readers misunderstood him, Villeneuve said. People saw Dune as a celebration of Paul Atreides, but for him, he wanted the book to be a warning regarding messianic figures. And so Shawnee represents the audience, us, and what we should think, you know, how we should perceive Paul. And so Villeneuve went on to say that Herbert's sequel, Dune Messiah, was written almost like an epilogue to correct that perception that Paul was a virtuous hero ushering in the good times. When the holy war begins at the end of Dune, you should have a pit in your stomach and chills running down your spine, not that Paul was triumphant. Villeneuve's movies make that clearer than the original Dune book. So that's essentially what it's what the change and why it wasn't from his own words. Mm-hmm. So makes sense why he made that change. And from that change, the things that sprout was, it changes a little bit about the Bene Gesserit. It makes it less subtle, definitely clearer, and that makes Paul's character have to change in personality and shift in revenge. You have to make him more anti than the hero, as we discussed. But one aspect, do you want to add on that? Because I have another aspect to throw in that changed as
Go
well.
Ahead. Go on.
Because I thought this was interesting. So from the first movie, you know, Keynes was gender swapped.
Yeah. Right.
And I didn't think much of it. And then I looked at their love story in part two. And one thing that sprouted in the Dune book that was a connection between the two is they'd both lost their fathers. And that was a connection that they both had in the book. And it was something that, you know, built their bond, almost trauma-bounded in a sense. But it was something that wasn't in the... Because obviously the movie made a big change. Like, Keynes also died differently in the films. And
that's also...
Yeah.
It's such... I know it's not worth it for the movie. Like, it's a worthy thing to cut from the first movie. I'm sorry. But Keynes' death in the book was so great.
Well, here's the thing.
It's some of the best writing that Frank Herbert ever did.
The thing is, the movie did show Keynes' death, but it was just different.
I know, the book showed the hallucination and the talk of the desert. Being swallowed up by the worm. Not actually the explosion, but... it was so good.
Yeah.
And then Keynes just dies.
Yeah.
Like, okay.
Yeah, I get it. You can't have a... So the Keynes in the book, like, influence
is
all...
Is it Kynes?
Probably.
I think it's Kynes.
Okay, Kynes. Someone just realizes who we're talking about. Like, that person. So yeah, Kynes in the book as well is way more integral to how all the water functions and is the architect behind all of this in a sense. But anyways, that one change, I was going through everything that changed, and that was one thing I noted was, okay, well, because they gender swapped in the previous movie, and now in this one, they can't relate from them both losing their fathers, which I don't know how much screen time that would take as well.
Also, I think due to the racial change, or I don't even know if it's change, but at the very least in the movie, mm-hmm. Kynes is much darker complexion than Shawnee. So I don't even think that Kynes is her mother. Mentioned.
They might not be related in the movie. Whereas in the book, Kynes is literally Shawnee's father.
Yeah, so I know. I'm just saying, like, if they did the gender swap, they could still do, like, you know, Shawnee lost her mother instead of her father.
But hey, it wasn't mentioned either way.
I know. It wasn't mentioned. I don't think it's supposed to be implied.
No.
I don't know.
It's just something that is in the book that's not in the movies because of the direction it went. Mm-hmm. But that's another change with Shawnee, because Shawnee was just very different. And at the end of it, so we're analyzing from all the changes that were made. Do you think there were good changes or bad changes now that we've got Shawnee pictured here?
I think there were good changes, but some of the changes led to less exciting scenes. There's some stuff where I'm like, man, the book, it was so epic. Where this one is not as cool as it could have been. My main thought is the ending throne scene where, you know, the ending scene in the book with Paul, the duel, him confronting the emperor is epic. It's awesome. And the movie, it kind of looks more like a petulant child. And that's like stomping his feet. Emperor, now. Like, make me emperor. It's not as impactful.
Is this my time to be like, how much I hate Timothy Chalamet? Listen, I get it. Everybody loves how he acted. I'm wrong. It's 95. I get it. Everybody that's watching right now loves this movie, and we're destroying our credibility by critiquing this at all. I know that. But Timothy Chalamet, to this day, he freaking annoys me. Something about... So I get that. You know that impassioned speech, and obviously he's acting his butt off.
Hey, that was really well acted. That was probably one of my favorite scenes in the movie is him confronting the council.
Yeah.
That was great. I saw a little bit of Paul in there.
Hey, I saw it too. But then it's those scenes you're saying at the end where he's like, the silence! And then like, pound it. I'm with you and just, I don't know. It's just me and Timothy. That's just...
Especially that I know why they took it out so he doesn't come across more as the hero.
Yeah.
But his conversation and his argument with the Reverend Mother, the Emperor's Reverend Mother at the end of the book is so good. It's so powerful. But yeah.
Changes again. And to finish up with Chani's changes, one thing that led to her character shifting a bit and having conflict with Stilgar, for example, just a note is that Stilgar in the film was your comic relief. And Stilgar in the books was not.
He was the friend, and what was very important for him, it was more of a tragedy for Paul, is Stilgar was a friend.
Mm-hmm.
He was a really good friend to him over the couple years. And there was a point where Stilgar, like there's a switch is flipped, and Stilgar no longer sees Paul as his friend and sees him as the Lisan al-Ghaib. And Paul realizes he lost a friend. And he gained a devoted follower.
Yeah.
And that's a tragedy. That's a tragedy in the book. And it's, again, another little inkling of something's wrong. This is not good. This is not a good path to be on. Again, probably too subtle for the book, for a lot of people. And honestly, it would have been for me if I didn't like read it twice and also read things about what Frank Herbert said. Because, yeah, I'm often like, going to the book and like, oh, that was epic. So right. I could have, especially if I didn't know beforehand, I probably would have confused things.
Yeah.
But now, yeah, Stilgar was always the devoted follower, never even really a friend, and not as impactful in this movie.
Yeah, the biggest thing, so with adaptations as well, obviously you have to remove stuff. So something like that, just you have to cut down. You have to cut down places. And where do you cut? You just got to figure it out. In the part one, we didn't have the dinner scene that we loved. You got to cut down at places. I wish they didn't cut that, of course. But
with, how would you do that?
So with the most important thing with this whole conversation, so Stilgar, of course, they removed that bit. The change they made with Stilgar was more of that conflict with Chani and showing us like this Fremen culture was a bit split on things. So that's what it did to change the books. And I wouldn't say, obviously, I think the Stilgar shift, I would have loved to see it too. But at what point do you say, just put all the book, just make a 10-hour movie? I don't know.
Yeah.
But
it's a change. I'm not against it. It's just sad to see that it couldn't be fit in. I understand why.
Well, then how about the person that you saw change more than Chani, Jessica? What do you think her biggest change was from book to film?
It's a 180 arc. She's the opposite character. Literally the opposite from the book.
Tell me.
The book starts off with very beginning on of Jessica is the Bene Gesserit kind of first, mother second, or at least 50-50 and hard loyalties and looking out for Paul as the Kwisatz Haderach rather than as a son. It's conflicting, but she's looking out for the Kwisatz Haderach's future and the duty that Paul must uphold, both as the Duke and as the savior that the Bene Gesserit have created. And then she's going through this, and then she becomes afraid of Paul, afraid of his power, and realizing like she doesn't control him, and like afraid of everything that he has, that he's become. Evolving then into,
there's a line that Paul says, "My mother is my enemy," right?
Yeah, or will be
my enemy. Yeah,
but then Jessica sees in Chani, where she's always antagonistic against Chani to a certain degree of like, hey, Paul's just blinded by love. He needs to actually withhold it. Basically doing the exact same thing to Chani that people did to her. And eventually realizes that Chani wants what's best for Paul, not for the Lisan al-Ghaib, not for the station he holds. Truly wants what's best for him. And Jessica changes and going, you know what? Yeah, screw it. Screw the Kwisatz Haderach. Screw the prophecies, any of that. I'm here for my son. I'm going to do what's best for him. And what's best for him is Chani. And all this, like, she becomes far more the mother than the Bene Gesserit. And she leans into that. Not so with the movie. She revels in Paul's power and is goading him into it. And is just like, yeah, let's go. Let's get this war started, baby.
So if you're all listening, Rich is saying he could do better than Denis Villeneuve.
I don't even know if that's better. It's just change.
I'm just throwing that because I've already critiqued it enough to, like, you know, throw the blame on you. I agree. And I think that shift as well. Yeah, that shift with Jessica, she was more, Denis Villeneuve, again, his reasoning, his motivation behind this was making Jessica a way bigger character than she was in the end of Dune the book.
Yeah.
Or making her a more integral character that actually pushed things forward.
In Dune the book, Jessica was a far more integral person in book one with the whole plot with...
Oh yeah, that's the whole thing that changes. She
was cut. That's my favorite. It's one of my favorite things, and what made me fall in love with her character in the book is that whole plot for her being the traitor, mm-hmm. and how that carries over through the other characters all the way through all three books.
Right,
loved it.
Gurney completely and Thufir. Thufir's not in the second movie in part two, but Thufir and Gurney both think that Jessica is, to that day when they see Jessica eventually, think that she betrayed Duke Leto because the information that came around, that is the thought. Mm-hmm. And it turns out they were wrong, of course, because it was Dr. Yue. But yeah, that whole change as well. But with Jessica in the second part, at least, I feel like we're... Hold on, let me walk back for a second and say some good things.
Sure.
Because I feel like we went off the deep end for
a little
bit.
She acted incredibly well. She was real creepy talking to her unborn baby. That was real creepy.
Oh, it was freaking creepy.
And it was good. I liked a lot of the dialogue scenes between her and Paul. When she's become the Reverend Mother.
Yeah, I also want to say, like, Dune should not, there should not be another movie adaptation. No. Like, all I'm saying, you know, Lord of the Rings movie adaptations happened. Like, that's it.
Yeah.
You don't do it again.
No, Bashki really just nailed it out. He got it down.
Yeah, you got the references. Nice. And so Dune, as far as the movies go, just keep, yeah, this is Dune. And Jessica's, all these portrayals and differences, I don't want to make it, I'm just trying to help you and make it sound like you don't hate the movie.
I don't.
Yeah. I'm clarifying that this is just your general personality.
Yes. Yes. Finding the faults in little things.
The faults in amazing things is Rich's forte.
Here's the thing. I'm not even saying that this is a fault because I don't particularly know if this was a good change or not. It seems it must have been a necessary change to make Jessica more of an important figure in the movies.
Yeah.
Which I'm not opposed to. I like her character. But in doing so, you've taken away what I liked about her character.
I get that. And honestly, walking away from the film too, I think I do. I think you like it more than me. Probably.
I probably do, yeah.
You probably do like the film, but it won't sound like it because of that. I'm just clarifying for you so that if people attack, just make sure I'm the one who likes Dune less than...
You want to give our, like, just our subjective, like, throw out of the number, like, out of 10 rating, like, in the middle so people don't see it as easy?
Want to throw it?
Yeah, I think so.
Just random out of 10 for the movie?
A random out of 10, yeah.
Okay, 3, 2, 1, 7.
7.
Oh.
Hey!
Friendship! But 5 is average to us.
I feel like just because you gave it 7, I want to give it like 7.5. I liked it a bit more.
I'll go down to 6.5. We'll have a point gap.
There we go. 7.5.
I'm happy with that. So obviously we're not giving that 10 out of 10. I think it's deserved that for the cinematography and the storytelling. Cinematography and the way that the story is portrayed and the visuals and all that stuff. So we're just going over. We're impossible to please, okay? That's all it is.
Here's the thing. We sat down going like, hey, we gotta review Dune Part 2.
Of course.
Have to. BookTube channel. We just read Dune.
Sci-fi fantasy.
Of course, we have to. But it seemed to us a little boring just to talk about, like, oh, all the stuff we liked. Ah, this movie did this cool. Not as fun.
No.
But I think comparing it to the book is fun.
It's more fun. It's more fun for us. And I'm going to go on to your favorite part. You ready?
Okay.
Your people.
My people?
Your people.
The Harkoners.
It's Harlequins, isn't it? Is it the Harkonnens.
The Harkonnens.
Harkonnens.
We've both been wrong.
Harkonnens. We're so bad. We call ourselves fans. Oh, this is disgusting. Okay. Yeah. The Harkonnens. One big...
You said it wrong again!
Wait, did I?
Yeah.
Oh, shit.
It's the Harkonnens.
We're not just... We're stupid, too. It's...
Yeah.
So, the Harkonnens. Mm-hmm. I didn't even do that on purpose. That's just bad.
I know.
That's just ignorance. So, the Harkonnens. The biggest...
is their biggest negative.
Maybe negative, but I almost saw it as funny. It was a little funny to me how evil the Harkonnens are. To where the suspension. Oh. I think it's more fun to go negative on something people love. Let me dive into the more negative stuff. Just cause. Okay,
I'm in agreement with you here.
The suspension of disbelief of how many people they just kill and slit their throats of how does this society survive and prosper? How is anybody alive if every second someone's just getting like chicken head cut off? It doesn't make sense. And go ahead. Why did that bother you?
It's not just that. It's also they're dumber. They're way stupider in the movies than in the books. In the books, they're actually very intelligent. You completely understand why they won. The Harkonnens, they rule by controlling vice. That's their whole thing. They manipulate people's vices, and how the Baron actually, when he comes across a new person, he goes like, oh, that person's addicted to this drug.
Right.
I now have his lever. Great. He controls the people by giving them the whole gladiator fights because he's giving into their animalistic desires, basically to keep them oppressed, give them their bread, give them their, their circus.
Exactly.
I completely understand in the books how the evil Baron is able to control and rule as well as he is. And he's also thinking several steps ahead of he knows why the like emperors that one he finds out a little later. But to a degree, he knows the emperor wants to attack the Atreides. He has plans within plans of like, oh, I know that the Atreides are going to figure out this plan, but I'm going to slip in this false note and make them suspect the Lady Jessica.
Okay, a lot of substance that you can't get into as much.
But here's one that you could have done that I don't know why they didn't do it for the movie, is the simple plan, and this one could have been done in the conversation in the movie, and I think this is a
fault. The gladiator scene?
No.
No?
It's the factor of when the Duke sends Robin to like, he tells him in the part one, squeeze Robin, squeeze them. We need, like this costs a lot, we need to squeeze them for all they're worth.
Yeah.
And then when he talks to Ferratha about, like, I'm going to give you Arrakis. And he goes, well, what? Like, you've given it to Robin. And in the movie, he says, well, Robin failed me.
Right.
In the book, he's like, no, I set him up
to failure.
Like,
yeah.
We've already pushed him so hard. Like, the way that this plan works is I make Robin take the fall. He pushes them way too hard. You come in as the savior.
The Baron is much smarter in the books where he actually planned that.
Yeah, because he can't come in right after Atreides. He can't come right after the Atreides who actually treated them well with respect and then treat them how he always has. Right. So he has to treat them way worse. And then bring someone to bring it back up.
Look
to
the like Baron's the good level. Guy.
Exactly. Yeah. Smart plan. probably would have worked.
And what you're saying in the context of the film, that doesn't take any extra screen time, really. It's just changed that conversation.
It could have just changed, like, the Baron intended for this to happen. Okay. And he could have just said, like, I set up Robin to fail. I told Robin to squeeze.
Yeah.
And when you take the throne in Arrakis,
yeah,
you will be their savior. That's all it needed. Right. But for some reason, they make him dumber. Right. And then, yeah, of course, all the times where, like, someone slightly displeases them and they just kill them. All the useful people that they need just slit their throat. That person coughed in my general direction.
Slit.
Dead.
Yeah.
Hey, I ordered you to do something and give me information. You gave me information I did not like. Die. How does that function for anything?
They're just
it's the Kylo Ren junk from Star Wars of, like, acting like a petulant child. And for some reason, people still follow you.
Yeah, that it's that suspension of disbelief of how in the world is this believable in this world?
Yeah.
And that portion you're talking about I keep mixing them up. It's Robin, then Feyd Rafa, right?
Feyd
Rafa. But Feyd Rafa's character, played by Austin Butler, this has nothing to do with the storytelling. This has nothing to do with good or bad. I just couldn't get his Elvis voice out of my head. Did you hear that? Did you hear Austin Butler still has that Elvis twang going on? I heard it. You heard it?
Yeah, a little bit.
A little bit, yeah.
I think he acted really well.
Oh, yeah, he did, of course.
Honestly, probably highlight actor of the movie.
Also, again, the look. And I could... Okay, let me take a macro look at this as well and just go, I know people going in and watching this movie. It's epic. Story's great. You're just watching the action scenes. You're watching the buildup. It's a really well-made movie. And look at all these good things. And then you come on to your 50 minutes into a Two to Ramble episode. And we've just gotten more and more negative, and it's going to get worse because this next portion. But the through fear was missing from the movie, by the way. And that was unfortunate. But again, you know what? I understand that.
Cuts.
So cuts, understandable. When we're talking about cutting versus changing, the cuts, I think... I will always give benefit of the doubt for cuts, unless you cut, like, a very pivotal scene. I think in the grand schemes of the books, Thufir was a smaller portion.
Yeah.
Very cool portion.
Very cool.
Very, very cool.
And thing is, it's not relevant without the first part of the whole betrayal scene. If you don't have that, it's not relevant.
It was already set up to not be a part of this. But last portion of this I want to mention is the Emperor.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Just some shifts with the Emperor, and one small thing is the Emperor in the film. This is obviously, I shouldn't even comment about this, but the Emperor in the film, Christopher Walken's, obviously in the 70s and 80s. In the book, he's described as, like, looking like he's in his 30s, or just a very that I think it was the spice or something that kept him younger or looking younger. So he was all there still, and he was young and youthful and had that kind of presence. That was just a visual difference from movie to book. Just throwing it out there so it's in the ether. But for that was one change. But also, did you think his motivations changed at all from the book versus the film?
I mean, yes. So in the books, again, people in the books were far more intelligent than in the movie. And I get maybe it's hard to show.
It's fair,
but
yeah.
In the books... The Emperor killed Duke Leto because Duke Leto actually was able to train his soldiers to the same degree that, like, as the Sardaukar. The Emperor saw him as a threat and just realized, like, oh, shoot. The Duke, like, in time will have an army as good as mine, and that can't happen. Mm-hmm. Like, it's kind of evidence in the book where... The Harkonnens, like, their soldiers suck. They're terrible. Like, everyone fears the Sardaukar. But for some reason, like, the Duke, with way less resources and way less depression, is able to, just out of kindness and loyalty, is able to train good enough soldiers that are as good as the Sardaukar.
Right.
And so the Emperor's like, that's a threat. I have to kill him, even though I love him. He's a great, like, I love him as a man. Like, I care for him.
And to be fair, I think the beginning of the film, it does say how Princess Irulan at the beginning of the film was saying how her father was grieving the loss of Duke Leto. So it was mentioned there. I think that's how the very movie began.
It starts, but the end of it says, like, oh, your father was weak. Weak heart and all this stuff. It's like, no, he wasn't. It wasn't weak.
The way I was justifying that in my head, so I thought about it a lot. I was going, did I like that? Did I not like that?
It just the emperor lashing out at Paul?
I think part of it was like him saying that his father was weak of heart, where I think what he's saying there in the film was that Duke Leto was weak, that he didn't understand his way of governing was incorrect, or he was weak in that he didn't understand, like, you have to make decisions for political reasons, and he did not understand politics. He was too altruistic and naive, in a sense, Duke Leto was a weak man, which is true in the books as well. Like, I think that's how, because at first how I took it in the film was when he said your father was a weak man, I was like, oh, but the emperor loved him, why would he say that? Because there's a line he didn't say in the books, but I think that was the direction it was going. That's how I justified it. But either way that it went, I think that it was a small enough portion as well in the end, where if we're looking at the grand scheme of the plot from start to finish, instead of getting really granular and pointing out every single difference and whining about the film, start to finish, does it stay faithful to the message of the book?
I think so. It stays faithful to the message. It stays faithful to the message without being so subtle about it. The books, I think, take that message in a more subtle route. The movie makes it far more obvious. And if you're not in the characters' heads to actually explain their inner monologue, it seems pretty obvious why you have to make it more obvious in your plot structure.
Yeah, I'd even say, I'm not saying the 10 out of 10 that other people are, and that maybe some people clicked on this one. I can't wait to see Rich and Austin raving over this film. Like, imagine this. We're fantasy and sci-fi nerds, and what is apparently the best sci-fi movie to come out in the 21st century. Mm-hmm. And I could see the disappointment in that regard. I'm trying to make the point that this film, to me, was... I don't want to crap on it too much or look like this is bad, because this should be like, I
want this to be the standard.
Yeah.
That'd be nice.
I don't want to be like, don't do these again, because the care that he had in the film, I'm looking at all the positive qualities and trying to go, okay, someone that walked into this film that could give two craps about every detail coming in or every single change looks at it and goes, wow, what an immersive experience seeing Dune on screen. I've been reading this for 20, 25 years, because people who have read it more than us, mm-hmm. that are smarter than us about the book, have looked at this and are super satisfied with it. So I was trying to look in, like, I was looking at the people that loved it, people that hated it, going on both scales, and trying to find why didn't it connect as much. Honestly, my reasons
for not giving it the 10 out of 10,
it
has almost nothing to do with the changes from the book. It's just kind of how the movie got to me,
right,
where I wasn't as pulled in by some of the characters. Like, the characters were good, but to me, not amazing.
No, that's fair.
The action, I thought the visual spectacle was pretty cool, but again, action was not as amazing as some other stuff that I've seen. Like, I think, to me, the action was more, like, thrilling and more tense in Godzilla Minus One. That was more tense action that I enjoyed. This one, like, it didn't feel the same. So plot as well, where I like the plot. I get it's making the message of the book simpler and understandable. Completely get it. But also, just didn't grab me as much. It was good, but not amazing.
You know what I'm really trying to justify is I'm a natural optimist. I'm naturally like a sci-fi movie like this comes out, I want to be in that train of everybody just rooting on the sidelines going, let's go. And I hear myself, I hear you and myself right now.
It's never a good place to be.
No, I'm reflecting and going like, why am I being so critical? And I like it. I just felt like these are our honest thoughts. So we can't just sit here and go, we loved every second of it, or we hated every second of it. Just overall, it was a good movie, but we think that we're not just going to sit here and rave about it the whole time. We're also going to, whatever. Just a whole jumbled mess of us liking some things, disliking others. Not even a full review, really. Talking about the changes.
Here's some of the differences. Here's what we thought about them. Let us know what you thought about the changes down below. And yeah.
Wait. How does it go again? Hold on.
Again, keep missing the last note.
Driving plays a big part in driving the local economy. It helps us all get where we're going and creates good jobs close to home. At Synovus Energy, our refineries in Toledo and Lima are a reliable domestic source of gasoline, diesel, and jet fuel. Plus, more than 2,300 employees and contractors work for us here in Ohio. See how we're helping local communities move forward at synovus.com. Driving plays a big part in driving the local economy. It helps us all get where we're going and creates good jobs close to home. At Synovus Energy, our refineries in Toledo and Lima are a reliable domestic source of gasoline, diesel, and jet fuel. Plus, more than 2,300 employees and contractors work for us here in Ohio. See how we're helping local communities move forward at synovus.com.